First of all, it is very nice to be here again, and probably most of you, they understand each term here, but let me just say a few words about high-density QCD, and I mainly discuss this one. High-density QCD, chemical potential, and especially when I learned yesterday from Igor that essentially he knows how to make some kind of connection in terms of supergravity, how to describe this branch with superfluid component and stuff like that. So essentially it maybe have some kind of connection, and I discuss these connections later on. But because I am at KITP, let me say from the very beginning, I work in the real world, 3+1, so no any confusion about that. Number of superchargers, 0, number of light quarks, in most cases 3, but sometimes I discuss 2 as well. And what we know that we don't have any interesting topological things in the standard model, like strings, domain, walls, monopoles, at least just the standard stuff. Why is it so? Because it's exactly the way how standard model works. But nevertheless, what we know that in high density QCD and in large NC limit, the situation is very, very different. And because most of you are very familiar with large NC, I want to actually make some connection between large NC and high density and large chemical potential, because if you have some kind of intuition about large NC, in this case you would get some intuition about large density, and actually it helps to understand what I'm talking about. So I made this table to make this some kind of similarities. What is the common feature? The most non-trivial feature is the following, that actually eta prime physics. In large NC, you all know about this non-trivial statements, that eta prime is very light, that because theta parameter which comes in QCD, you have 2π periodicity, and once you have periodicity, you definitely know that you have some domain walls. In QCD, typically, we do not discuss such kind of domain walls because eta prime is really heavy, and if it is a heavy particle, in this case, makes no sense to discuss the effective Lagrangian. But once eta prime is light, it makes perfect sense to discuss effective eta prime domain wall. And because U1A not only explicitly but spontaneously broken by the chiral condensate, we definitely know that eta prime is a light field, has eta prime string, and you have domain wall attached to eta prime string. This is something you're supposed to have intuition with large NC. Now, about large mu, it could be a different story for most of you, but the important remark here is the following, that eta prime is also is very, very light particle. For example, not for nuclear density, but let's say for chemical potential, 500 MeV, eta prime could be as light as 10 MeV. So it's lighter than any pi meson. U1 is also explicitly broken for large chemical potential, and it is also spontaneously broken. So essentially, the physics for large mu is very similar in terms of large NC and large mu. You have string because you have spontaneous limited breaking. You do have domain wall because you have explicit instanton contribution, but because actually it is suppressed, this is the first time when in QCD you can explicitly calculate all these instanton contributions perfectly well, and you see what's happening actually with instantons. But before I go ahead with large density, again, let me just make a very short review about color superconductivity. Again, I'm assuming that you have intuition with normal superconductors. So essentially, you know that if you have normal fermions, and if you have very, very actually weak interaction between two fermions, in this case, they definitely condense. This is something we know already for many years from normal conductivity, and this is a BSC pairing. You have Cooper pairs, and actually I will mention something about high TC superconductors and some analogies as well later on. But what's happening in QCD, it's exactly the same. When you have actually high density, in this case, what you have diquark condensates, which is very, very similar to Cooper pairs. But here, instead of delta, which is in normal superconductors, it's something like a few kelvins, 10 to minus 4 EV. Here I am talking about 100 MeV scale for the gap. So it's completely different scale. And specifically, I'll discuss different phases just in a couple of minutes, but specifically there is so-called CFL phase, color flavor locking phase, where there is a very specific actually combination for this diquark condensates, and it is known that this is actually the most favorite combination, which gives you the just largest gap. So the way how actually QCD works in for high density, you have all the symmetries. And you have, at the end, you have SU3 color left, right, and electromagnetic, which is also not the original one, but some combination. And let me just say.
Could you please remind what, how do you identify the most attractive channel?
So essentially what people do, people just check different channels. They solve equation for the gap, and they say, that this is definitely attractive channel is just definitely six-layer quark in anti-symmetric state. Usually you discuss not normal gluon but six component, and you check different channels, and this is some kind of job which has been done, and you can check what kind of condensates would you get, and this is definitely for CFL for all masses which are exactly zero, this is the most attractive. But I discuss all possible phases in a second. So essentially, we'll see that you have many different possibilities, not necessarily this one. So there are many, many other options. But for in the Carroll limit, when you have exactly three light quark, this is just the best choice.
Three bar?
Yeah. Okay, so essentially, the end of the story that for large chemical potential, high density, U1B baryon symmetry is spontaneously broken. So in electromagnetic, typically in the normal normal superconductor, conventional superconductor, you do have Meissner effect. So you have actually electromagnetic U1 is also broken. But here, because the gluon, lambda 8, and original U1, they mix such that photon remains massless. And axial U1 related to eta prime is also spontaneously and explicitly broken by instanton. So all these fields, Goldstone fields, are defined as the phases of this diquark condensate. And baryon phase, which is a superfluid component, is defined as a phase of some kind of combination. So this is something about high density QCD. That actually the phase structure I'll show in a minute, it is much, much more complicated. So essentially it could be not only condensation of diquark condensate I mentioned, all these phases also could get some non-zero vacuum expectation value in this environment. So in this case it is just indeed very interesting physics. Okay, and let me show just a couple of pictures about phase diagram, and it is important to understand actually what kind of topological defects you would expect. So that just if you take exactly two flavors in this case, you have so-called two flavor superconducting phase. It's very, very similar to color flavor locking, but nevertheless it is a superconducting phase. This is a normal hadronic phase. If you have actually NC equals 3 and F equals 3 and all quarks are massless, in this case it's a little bit, it's exactly what I mentioned. It is a CFL phase. And this is a normal nuclear matter, and this is a normal hadronic phase.
Just to be clear, before you talked about the spontaneous breaking of color symmetry,
yes.
Then you answered to Igor that it's 3-3 bar. Is it 3-3 with condensates or 3-3 bar with condensates?
3-3, of course.
3-3.
3-3.
But the night work is 3 bar, right?
Well, that's
yes. So essentially,
not
but 3 bar, it's okay. 3 bar ij, this is something which condenses, epsilon ijk. Definitely not bar. We have just not antiquarks. Okay, so if situation a little bit more complicated, that essentially an effort is a 2+1, so 2+1 too light and 1 is not very light. In this case, it's really a mess. So essentially here it's normal color flavor locking. It is a normal hadronic phase. And this is something I'll show that it could be two flavor superconducting phase. It could be some kind of different K or eta prime could be eta could be condensed as well together with all these diquark condensates. And by the way, if you look at high TC superconducting phase diagram, in this case, this phase diagram is very similar to what actually a condensed matter discussed. But here instead, what you have instead of mu, you have doping. Here you have temperature. Here it's similar to antiferromagnetic phase, and this is a superconducting phase, and nobody knows what is somewhere in the transition region in high TC superconductors, and also in actually high color superconductor as well. Let me show that just very, very shortly. It is a very complicated picture as a function of quark mass, and I don't want to discuss this very complicated picture because actually definitely it is irrelevant for to look from your side of supergravity. Okay, so essentially the reason why I described all these phases, because I want to discuss different topological defects and I want to explain what they are and how they developed and how do they look like and what is the analogy with normal physics, normal condensed matter physics, and I hope actually there is some kind of relation with supergravity, and I'll explain at the very end of the talk what could be the relation. Okay, now let's discuss different topological defects, what you would expect. First of all, you definitely would expect normal superfluid phonon, normal superfluid, absolutely massless degree of freedom, which is related to the spontaneous violation U1B. And as I said, Igor told me that essentially they have a branch where such kind of superfluid mode appears in their description. The most important part for me at this point, that essentially, as I mentioned, eta prime is extremely light. So therefore, you can describe actually effective Lagrangian for eta prime. And you have spontaneous symmetry for eta prime, and you have explicit symmetry violation for eta prime. Therefore, actually, effective Lagrangian can be explicitly written down, and all coefficients here can be explicitly calculated. So it is not something from nowhere as a f pi in chiral Lagrangian. These coefficients are explicitly calculated from the original in terms of lambda QCD. All of them they are known. The most interesting part, and I'll discuss this part here, because actually you don't have Lorentz invariance, you have a speed of sound. The most interesting part, and I discuss this part in a few seconds, it is a part related to the instantons. You explicitly reproduce this cosine, so essentially it's something you would expect immediately because you know it should be something like cosine theta, and because you know that eta prime comes into the game exactly in this combination, so it's something you would expect. Non-trivial part is the following, that this coefficient is actually can be calculated explicitly in QCD because density is suppressed when chemical potential is non-zero. So all calculations are under complete theoretical control in this case. But nevertheless, I discuss instantons in just in a few seconds because it is extremely non-trivial what's happening with actually semi-classical calculations, because actually you will see that quantum corrections are much more important than standard semi-classical calculations. Okay, so essentially a few statements, that eta prime is definitely very light, all coefficients can be calculated, that eta prime corresponds to the transition between phi 0 and 2 pi. Let me just actually explain what kind of transition I am talking about. So essentially, I am talking about the following transition. This is the potential. This is a standard cosine. This is a phi a. And for each denominator theta, so essentially, I am talking about the following transition. If you integrated out all heavy degrees of freedom, you have exactly this cosine, which is a light degree of freedom. And this transition, it's exactly between these points. So if it is a normal, and I was trying to demonstrate in just in configurational space, it's exactly the transition between 0 and 2 pi, transition for eta prime. So it is something which is well known, but the statement I am trying to make is the following, that if eta prime is the only degree of freedom, it is a normal sine Gordon, and you would say it is an absolutely stable soliton, it is an absolutely stable degree of freedom. If it is a two-dimensional physics, yes, that's absolutely true. But if you take into account heavy degrees of freedom, because you remember we integrated out heavy degrees of freedom before we actually derived this Lagrangian, I want to draw actually potential where heavy degrees of freedom are not integrated out completely. And in this case, what eta prime is, eta prime domain wall, it is a 0 and it is a 2 pi. This is a heavy degrees of freedom. So when you go along this path, it's essentially here, you have very, very small potential. You have a barrier which is a very high. And when I'm saying that eta prime is light, it means that essentially this hue is not very high. This peak is not very high. This is exactly this one. It is definitely suppressed. So eta prime domain wall corresponds to exactly this transition before you integrate it out heavy degrees of freedom. It's exactly what I wanted to say. So essentially, in reality, it is not absolutely stable configuration because there is a tunneling. There is a normal quantum mechanical tunneling because it is just goes exactly to the same point. So let me try to explain in a different way. In condensed matter physics, when you have a normal ferromagnetic, you have spin here, you have spin here, definitely domain wall is absolutely stable configuration. No way you can remove this domain wall. Domain wall, eta prime domain wall I'm talking about is completely different. It is not configuration like that. It is a configuration like that, but you make a circle this way. So two vacuum states on the left and on the right, they're exactly the same. They're equivalent. So essentially, this is exactly the reason why you have a tunneling. And typically, when people discuss tunneling, they definitely say this is the domain wall. You have actually a vacuum state here and there. And what you do, you calculate critical size bubble, which actually goes with the speed of light. And this is exactly the way how domain wall, eta prime domain wall, can decay. So essentially, again, you can do all calculations here. And I was trying to actually draw what tunneling means. Tunneling means that eta prime disappears, but essentially you have some kind of critical size of you call this instanton in two dimensions, and you calculate all parameters and it goes away. So essentially, the picture we have. We have eta prime, domain wall, which can decay but lives for a very, very long time. We have string. And I'm trying to actually write down completely different representation for this picture because I want to understand actually what instantons are. Okay, so essentially, it is a very, very nice effective Lagrangian, and you calculated this coefficient, and this coefficient is proportional to the density. It is a proportional di-quark condensate. You use the standard effective Lagrangian, so everything is under control, and density is small. And partition for eta prime is definitely something which I discussed before, this is effective Lagrangian. Now, I'm doing absolutely, I would say, I want to consider absolutely different representation for eta prime. It is a just standard transformation. It looks like absolutely stupid thing to do, because essentially you know that effective Lagrangian. It makes no sense to discuss any details, but nevertheless, I want to understand just the structure. What does it mean, string, domain, wall, in terms of instantons? And what I say that this is exactly equivalent to the representation like that, and people have been using such kind of representation for many years, and they know it just in two dimensions, in three dimensions, in four dimensions, it's exactly the same. You just expand your cosine. And why I want to do actually this transformation is the following, that after that I can integrate out this phi field, and my eta prime partition function can be represented in a very, very nice way. Let me say again from the very beginning that when I do this representation, I have no idea what is the physical meaning of the charges I introduce. It is a very formal procedure. So no physical meaning at this point. It just I introduce charges and I sum or plus minus everywhere. So right now I don't understand what they are. But what is important that once you do this presentation, you say, oh, there is some kind of charge in front of theta. And you remember, I keep theta parameter from the very beginning, not as a dynamical axion field in QCD, but as a parameter. I keep this parameter and I say, it means that this combination, it is a nothing but total charge. And total topological charge, by definition, which appears together with theta. So all these charges, it's nothing but topological charges. And after that, I say that for each given configuration, QA, which appears, it is a nothing but integer topological charge localized at point XA. And by definition, it is a small instanton topological charge. More than that, each particle brings you this factor which comes together with A. You remember that A comes exactly with this factor, which is definitely instanton action. So essentially, the point I'm making is the following. That it is represented in terms of some charges and identifies these charges with instantons. And now, why actually everything works in a perfect way? And everything is under theoretical control. Because instanton size, you remember mu minus 1, just because here nf, mu square, rho square. So essentially, you have instanton size. You have cutoff for my effective Lagrangian, because I cannot be go beyond this distance. This is the typical distance between these points. You can actually easily estimate. And this is Debye screening. So there is a hierarchy, and you can do all these calculations because of hierarchy. So essentially, non-trivial point is the following. The starting low effective Lagrangian, this is a cosine, contains phi A field, which is a eta prime, knows nothing about instantons. But nevertheless, you do this expansion, and it turns out that you can say something about instantons essentially when you do this expansion. And instantons actually can be studied from this non-trivial effective Lagrangian. A non-trivial statement I am trying to make, that if you do standard semi-classical calculations with instantons, you know exactly instanton, instanton, they don't interact on the classical level.
So you're just doing that. You calculate it.
Yeah, but
I'm going back,
but nevertheless, non-trivial fact that essentially, when you do these calculations, it was quite non-trivial. You take into account that there is actually background. It is not just trivial instantons. If it is trivial instanton, you have non-trivial background and you use effective Lagrangian with the Dyck-Clark condensate. So it's exactly what I want to say, that if you do standard instanton, a quasi-classical approximation, instanton, instanton, they don't interact, instanton, anti-instantons, they interact like crazy, 1 over g squared. on the not very large distances. But here picture which appears that essentially, if you integrate out all orientation, all possible sizes, you take into account interaction with the background, the interaction becomes very simple. It is just Coulomb-like. Okay, this is a remark about instantons where you can do these calculations, and it is definitely somehow related to eta prime, because this is a cosine, it's exactly what eta prime domain wall is. Okay, now I come back to Lachen C, because essentially the physics for Lachen C is very similar in a sense that in Lachen C limit, again, eta prime is very light. Because it is very light, you have very similar, actually, eta prime domain walls. Before you integrate it out heavy degrees of freedom, you have very similar potential. And the points 0 to pi, they are the same physical points. And this eta prime actually is in Lachen C limit is very stable, exactly use the same reason. So essentially, it is very, very similar. But let me just make remark that it is not exactly eta domain walls which people discussed in supersymmetric field theories, because what, for example, Schiffman discussed, he discussed the transition between different vacuum states where Gliugin phase is different. So I'm talking about very different eta prime, because QCD has a unique vacuum state, and I'm talking about not about transition between different vacuum states. I'm talking about the transition which is actually connects one and the same single point. Okay, so essentially, again, similarity is very goes very far in the sense that, again, for large NC, this barrier is NC squared, but eta prime, it is definitely much smaller, is order of 1, and mass is 1 over NC. And lifetime, again, can be estimated because, again, it is very, very large. And this is some kind of phenomenological consequences because we believe NC equals 3 in this respect is very similar to NC goes to infinity, because even for NC equals 3, you have exactly the same structure. That barrier here is higher than this one because it is related to the global degrees of freedom. Okay, so essentially, now I want to come to some kind of very interesting and some kind of recent development related again with eta prime and related with anomalies and related with superfluid massless phonons and related to the non-trivial topological objects we actually I introduced just a couple minutes ago. So essentially what I want to do, I want to derive anomalous effective Lagrangian describing the interaction not only light modes, which is a pi, eta, eta prime, for large NC or for large chemical potentials, they are just the same. But I want to introduce actually superfluid component as well. So it's something people actually didn't discuss previously with you can derive exactly in the same way as you discuss pi zero to gamma, but instead of one photon, you discuss superfluid component. So essentially, let me say what is going to happen. That essentially, there are new terms, which includes the superfluid phase, which I introduced earlier. And it is actually zero, and it's exactly what you would expect, unless background is non-trivial. So essentially, when you have some kind of domain walls related to this phase or non-trivial vortices, in this case, this objects give you very non-trivial, actually, leads to very non-trivial results. So essentially, it was the main reason. Say again.
Why do you call it?
Because it will come from anomaly. You will see. So essentially, I'm talking
about. It's not an axiom.
it will be axial enough, because I'm talking about the interaction pi eta prime with superfluid, not superfluid to gamma. I'm talking about pi eta prime superfluid. So the way how I derive, you will see in a second, that it is definitely related to epsilon mu nu lambda sigma. Yeah.
Why are chaos unimportant?
Why what?
Well, you have a list of boson bosons.
Yeah. In principle, I can include it, no problem. But in this case, actually, typically neutral components are much more important. And if you include, let's say, k naught,
neutral pi zero.
Yeah, it's neutral pi zero. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's neutral. Yeah, it's like pi plus anomalous. You can definitely discuss pi plus anomalous effective Lagrangian Verzumino Novikov. So essentially, you definitely can do this. But in this case, definitely does exist. Yeah, I want to discuss neutrals, but nevertheless, your question that essentially if you include K or K naught, K plus, they actually are also there, and principles that can be discussed. And it is interesting only if some kind of K plus or K naught actually condensed. By the way, it happens in high density QCD, and it might be actually quite interesting actually what kind of physical phenomena. okay, so again, essentially, as I said, it is something what I anticipate. It does not vanish if you have non-trivial background, such as vortices. And what you will see that there are many interesting phenomena, just classical. For example, Witten's cosmic superconducting strings have been introduced just many years ago in 1994, and you will see that actually such kind of phenomena appears in high density QCD, which is quite non-trivial. You will see other very non-trivial phenomena, such as a classical weak neutral currents. Typically, you can have classical electromagnetic fields, or just because you know what to do with electromagnetic fields. But here, in some cases, you can have some kind of Z as a classical field. You'll see some kind of very non-trivial currents which are flowing in on U1 vortices, and magnetization of non-trivial eta prime domain walls. Again, all these effects are definitely related to each other, and I believe it could be some kind of connection. Okay, the way how I derive all this anomalies. Actually, you know that there are 100 different ways to derive anomalies, but the way how I go is the following. Okay, so essentially I want to consider QCD not in the background of electromagnetic field, but I want to consider actually fictitious B mu field. And you know that this term mu psi, gamma naught psi, definitely can be gauged away. So essentially, if you introduce some kind of local gauge invariance, baryonic, it does not exist in nature, but nevertheless, it is a formal trick, nothing more than that. So essentially, you introduce some field which does not exist in nature, but nevertheless, what you say that this Lagrangian actually respects U1B local gauge transformations with respect to this phase, which is a local. It is not, it just exactly like electromagnetic, but simply it is not physical field. It does not have kinetic term. And the way how you can derive effective lower energy Lagrangian, you say the following, that at the very end, once you do all these calculations, your effective Lagrangian must be gauge invariant with respect to this gauge transformations, which is completely unphysical, as I said, but nevertheless, it must respect the symmetry. And at the very end, you definitely must come back to the physical point. Okay, so essentially, now I want to consider chiral transformations, because as I said, definitely must include chiral fields. And what you know the following. If you do chiral transformations, for example, eta prime, just singlet, but nevertheless for pi zero, for eta, it would be exactly the same. But I won't discuss eta prime. You know that essentially transformations actually lead to very non-trivial change in action because of anomaly. And you know exactly this current, so essentially divergence of this current. And in the presence of this fictitious B mu field, again, you do exactly the same calculations. And you get a little bit different, actually, expression for the anomaly. But nevertheless, as I said, the expression must be gauge invariant. And after that, you say, oh, all terms which include this beam field looks like completely trivial because it's zero, because at the very end, B mu must be replaced to D mu phi B. It is a superfluid phase. And definitely, it is correct if you want to discuss, for example, eta 2 superfluid phonons. That's absolutely correct. It does not actually give you any contribution. But nevertheless, yeah, okay, so even for you it is too fast. Yeah, just exactly the same calculations, the difference, the charge is a little bit different, but nevertheless, you consider QCD in the background of two fields, A field and B field, and you do exactly the same calculations in this non-trivial background of this combination, and you derive it. So essentially, non-trivial point I am trying to make, that essentially, if you have a vortex configuration, and if you are talking about some kind of eta prime vortex, in this case, phi A field, it is definitely has a 2 pi periodicity. And in the presence of topological defects like vortices, for example, you definitely have non-zero. So essentially, let me just write down effective Lagrangian in terms of physical fields, eta prime, Nambu-Goldstone fields, electromagnetic field, superfluid phase. And this is something which is very familiar. It is something like eta prime to gamma decay. And these terms actually describe the interaction between superfluid vortices and eta prime and phi b field, which I discussed before. So essentially, the way how you derive this anomalous effective Lagrangian is almost trivial. What is non-trivial is that essentially they lead to very non-trivial physical consequences. So let me give you just a couple of examples, because there are many other examples, and it could be actually phenomenologically very important, and I'll actually explain why. But nevertheless, let's consider just axial domain wall. So essentially, it is an eta prime domain wall I discussed here. It is definitely unstable in the physical real life, but nevertheless, in large NC limit, it is stable. In large mu limit, it is stable. So it lives much longer than any other directions. Okay, let's look, for example, at one term from this effective Lagrangian I discussed before. N, it is exactly just 1, 0. So essentially, one term of this effective Lagrangian looks like that, like B gradient phi A. And phi A, it's exactly the phase domain wall. It goes from 0 to on one side and to pi from the other side. And what you say the following. Because phi A on this domain wall has a jump to pi, and B as external field, I introduce external field to understand what kind of magnetic properties eta prime has, eta prime domain wall has. But what this Lagrangian means, it means that essentially your domain wall has non-zero magnetization, because when you apply B, this part, it is nothing but the magnetization. You have magnetic moment per area, which is non-zero, and it is actually expressed in terms of chemical potential. And you can calculate for different phases, and you get non-trivial, non-zero numbers expressed in terms of mu. So effect is quite non-trivial. So eta prime domain wall, I'm talking about here in terms of instantons and in terms of actually this potential, actually has non-zero magnetic moment per area. Okay, let's try to understand the same phenomena, but from different side. Let's look at the different term in the effective Lagrangian, which again was there. And let's try to see not at the eta prime domain wall, but eta prime string. Again, you remember, I discussed is the following, that Eta prime domain wall is here. Actually, it's quite wide. But you have attached eta prime string, which must be there. And if you make this circle, you definitely get 2 pi. So what I want to look, actually at this effective Lagrangian at eta prime string right here. And again, because phi A is non-trivial phase, in this case, the effective Lagrangian can be represented in the following form. What is the physical meaning of this stuff? Physical meaning is very simple. What you say the following, that you have a normal electromagnetic current, because something which dot A, by definition, it is an electromagnetic current. And you say that there is an electromagnetic current along eta prime string, and you have the main wall between this string. So you have here the main wall, you have eta prime string here.
This so,
yeah, it is unstable. No, it's very similar. Okay, we discuss this later. It's very similar. It depends on the current. So you know, for example, Wharton's, for example, when you have a current, in this case, it could be stable, like for Witten superconducting strings. If you have simply domain walls and there is no current whatsoever, in this case, I agree, unstable. But in general, not necessarily true. Okay, so it just... so essentially, you derive exactly the same expression for the magnetic moment per area. So essentially, as a statement I'm making, that large vortex loop, domain wall, eta prime string has non-zero moment, and you can calculate in any way you want, you get the same result. Few more, actually, examples. For example, I want to discuss axial current on superfluid vortex. Again, I discuss not eta prime vortex, but superfluid vortex. You remember I mentioned, because actually baryon symmetry is spontaneously broken, it means that you have actually superfluid superfluid vortex. And in this case, you do more or less the same calculations what I have done. You look at the anomalous term. And what I'm saying the following. There is an extra term which looks like total derivative, but nevertheless, it's definitely, we know that total derivative leads to the physically observable phenomena. So essentially, there is an axial current which runs along the superfluid vortex. And quantum numbers are such that essentially what it means that you created that classical electroweak field. Okay, so essentially one more example, and I stop with examples. So essentially now I want to discuss just specifically numbers for two flavor superconducting phase. In this case, you have a non-trivial electromagnetic interaction as well. And what you observe the following, that before I discussed eta prime and superfluid component without electromagnetic interaction. Now I introduce electromagnetic interaction, and I want to look at these terms. And it turns out that this term remains the same as before, as I discussed before. But there are new terms which appear from this anomalous Lagrangian. And if you look at the paper, Witten's paper 84, you'll find that this is exactly the structure he discussed for cosmic superconducting strings. So essentially, the statement I'm trying to make, it is quite unusual that actually he introduced superconducting strings, cosmic superconducting strings from essentially from some model he invented. But nevertheless, it naturally appears in high-density QCD, not exactly the string, but nevertheless, this non-trivial structure, which can be written exactly in this way. So essentially, this is a moral for what I wanted to say about the applications. So essentially, this non-trivial structure automatically realized in dense matter. And about eager questions about all this stability issue. So essentially, we know that sometimes the superconducting strings can be actually stable wartons. And I want to even make a remark that such kind of wartons might have been observed in BEC, Bose-Einstein condensates, but they simply didn't notice that. But the way how we actually read the paper with Max, they observed such kind of structure, and they saw that it is very similar what actually in helium-4, because you know that you can actually argamize such kind of wartons, that it is stable only because of Magnus forces, because when this wharton is moving. And they identified this wartons with, not with wartons, but with actually a ring with a helium-4, similar to helium-4 rings. And after that, actually, I talked to experimentalists because actually they definitely didn't see that they are moving. For example, I don't know, David, if you're still smoking the pipe, you know how to create such kind of wartons. But nevertheless, you must have moving all these rings. If they don't move, they collapse. Here what I'm saying even they don't move, they don't collapse because of the current. And as I said, just in nature, definitely people have never ever seen anything like that, but we believe with Max that actually it has been seen in BAC, but they simply didn't pay attention now because they do some kind of different physics and they don't want to come back to this experiment to see actually do they move, do they have actually moment or they don't. Okay. Okay, now essentially this is just some possible contact points, because it's exactly the reason for my talk, because I want to actually really understand this type of physics I discussed in terms of D-brain terminology. So what I noticed, and I was trying actually David Matthias, actually, he gave a talk, and this is the way how I learned about your paper. And I was trying to actually to talk to him, but it's different generation. He couldn't understand what I'm talking about, and I couldn't understand what he's saying. So essentially, I want to talk to you about actually this paper to make some kind of connection. So essentially, eta prime physics is definitely very interesting, and I'm trying to understand if there is any relation of eta prime strings and domain walls I discussed with what actually you have written in papers. And the second, yeah, the zero density, that's okay, but it, as I said, in large NC limit, eta prime string, eta prime domain wall do exist, and they have exactly the same properties. The reason why I discuss actually large chemical potential, because for me it's much closer and it is just has some relation to nature, I hope, maybe not. And the second possible contact points, because I read a couple of papers by Gia and Alex Vilenkin that essentially they mentioned that there is some possibility to discuss Witten superconducting strings in D-brain framework. So essentially, it also could be a possibility to have a contact points with what I said. And yesterday, Igor actually mentioned that they know how to discuss baryonic branch where you have a superfluid, absolutely massless superfluid phonon. And you definitely realize once you have a superfluid phonon, you immediately have a baryonic string. In terms of quantum field theory, for sure it is a just baryonic string, but nevertheless, it would be interesting to understand in terms of actually original degrees of freedom, because I can discuss here baryonic string in terms of effective Lagrangian, but originally everything comes from quarks, of course. So essentially, it would be interesting to understand actually the original. Okay, so but
the difference for what you're saying is that in that case, Lorentz invariance is not broken at all. Just because you have an M equal one supersymmetric theory, you can have baryonic condensates without just made out of scalars.
but still you have superfluid phonon. So it means that you still have it's my understanding it must be actually again superconducting, and it must be a current, axial current, which flows along the string. Okay, we can talk about this. Anyhow, I cannot finish talk without actually saying what kind of phenomenology or what kind of physics I'm trying to discuss. Let me just give you idea. What large baryon density, where it could exist. And you definitely know this picture very well with neutron stars. And essentially, when you calculate what is the typical density inside, in the inner core, its density, if you understand the phase diagram, QCD phase diagram correctly, in this case, some of this color superconducting phases must exist. And this is a normal proton-neutron superfluidity, superconductivity, but inside of core should be a different type of dense matter. And the second picture.
What is the typical density?
Typical density is a few times nuclear density. It is not actually very dense. So essentially, starting from chemical potential 450, you would expect that all the superconducting phase will star form. So essentially, it is a not unbelievably large density. But that's true that essentially, when you do calculations, perturbative calculations for very large mu. In this case, everything is under control. When you try to ask the questions, just phenomenological questions about mu equal 500 or 400 or 600, you use some kind of models, instanton liquid model, or many things like that. But nevertheless, people actually accept that few times nuclear density, you must have all this non-trivial actually phases. Okay, and the second, actually, it is for fun. Again, I want to mention Witten's, very old Witten's paper, 84. And you know that it could be very dense matter, so-called strangelets, and he introduces. And he said that it might be actually our dark matter, no supersymmetric particles, nothing, but it's just very dense matter. And some kind of recent development is something that this non-baryonic dark matter, it could be normal color superconductor. And before I go ahead, typically, because we don't have students here, but typically I ask students what would happen if you have a very dense matter, three times larger than nuclear matter, hits our Earth. Typically, professors don't answer, students do answer. Therefore, let me just show very unusual, this is the afters of the paper.
That's been around for some time.
No, I won't. You can do. You know all these papers, and I talked to you about this paper actually. So essentially, you know what is going to happen. Nothing is going to happen. If such kind of very dense ball hits our Earth, definitely, if you have gap, let's say 100 MeV or so, you definitely cannot destroy internal structure. What is happening? You have a shock waves only, so it goes through Earth, and the only actually object can stop such kind of object, it's neutron star. If it hits neutron star, it will stay there inside. Otherwise, it hits, it gives you shock waves and goes through, and that's about it. So essentially, you don't have any explosion, atomic bomb, nuclear bomb, nothing like that would happen. So essentially, it was exactly the idea that if such kind of object hits our Earth, typically what people in California, you're supposed to know what's happening with the earthquake. So earthquake is definitely a local event, so it's just point-like event. So, and all seismic stations, they definitely observe such kind of seismic waves from earthquake. And people definitely know very well, actually, how the signal propagates. They know Earth quite well, actually. So essentially, the idea is the following, that if it is not just point-like, but line-like, in this case, and it goes with a speed of 10 to minus 3 C, just if it is a dark matter. In this case, it goes through and it gives you a shock wave and seismic stations and nucleus stations supposed to actually. Okay, just in Witten's case, the size was not actually mentioned because in his case, but it could be for example, in, it depends. It's model dependent. And for example, the case I discussed, 10 to 33 GeV, it's something like 10 to minus 2 centimeters. But it's very heavy. It's 1 to 2, 10 ton. 10 to minus 2, 10 to minus 3 centimeters, 10 ton. Okay, let me just show the picture. You recognize that South America, this is where we are. So essentially, they definitely observe such kind, not observe, they definitely analyze data of 93, and they said that no way they can actually feed the data as a point-like event. So it's published in Seismology Journal, so essentially this community accepts this analysis, but particle physics probably does not. So essentially, particle physics community does not accept, because it just if it is a one event, there is nothing to discuss. But if you ask Vic Teplitz, who and I know him, is just his, this guy, who was actually in Dallas during SSC times, and he was the main person who actually wanted to do this analysis, and because he's from DOE, he has some relations with DOE people and nuclear arm control people. He worked in Washington, D.C. So essentially, he asked people to do this analysis, and what essentially he said that typically they removed all data from computers if it can be fitted as a just point-like seismic or nuclear atom explosion event. They just remove it. And sometimes if they don't remove, they can do analysis. Okay, so this is, I would say this is a, his explanation why we have just only, but by the way, you can easily calculate some numbers. If it is a just, they definitely know the speed, they definitely know actually time of entry and time of exit. It is a, roughly speaking, 10 to minus 3 C. They definitely know the actually, energetics, and if you just put all numbers in, because roughly speaking, you know the density around us, dark matter density, you know the flux, because flux it is a rho times 10 to minus 3 C, you would expect just one event per few years, 10 years or so, for such kind of stuff. It's just, it's trivial calculation, everyone can do it. So it is not something which is usual. Okay, thank you.
Next event is due now?
Yeah, roughly speaking, if you have actually, if you have data and which you can analyze, as I said, that unfortunately, what Vic Teplitz says, that unfortunately, many seismic stations, they do not have data or old data such that it is just not point-like, but linear-like stuff, because they just immediately they doing analysis from the very beginning and they removed all this they consider as a garbage immediately. It is not related to nuclear bomb explosion, it is not related to earthquake, makes no sense to analyze it. It is removed.
Why should we expect a 10 ton chunk?
Oh, okay, it is a different, it's related to my favorite axiom, as you know. So essentially, roughly speaking, the way how I do stabilization, because axiom domain wall inside with eta prime, and in this case, roughly speaking, it is a size of 10 to minus 3 centimeter, it is a size of the equilibrium. But definitely you have such kind of objects not necessarily related to eta prime or axiom domain walls. So in this case, the size would be different, but this is the way how actually I discuss the stabilization, personally. So it is a model dependent. Your favorite axiom and my favorite axiom. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But essentially, again, it is a model dependent. For example, in this specific model I am advocating about the just axiom domain walls, that is, in this case, if size is very small, in this case, you know that just if I'm talking about equilibrium from domain wall and Fermi pressure from outside, in this case, when R becomes very small, in this case, actually pressure, internal pressure is very high. So in this case, they would decay. They are not stable anymore. So they are not stable. Very, very small stuff are not stable. Very large. Why they are not stable? Because proton is lighter than Fermi momentum inside, because Fermi momentum is large. And if R is very large, in this case, actually, they can get out, because essentially it's...
If R is very large, they can absorb ordinary.
Yeah. If you are talking about that, that's true. If R is very large, if you believe in phase diagram when it is a ground state, that's absolutely correct, yes. So but if I believe that essentially,
heat up the earth.
No, it's just David. It is a model-dependent statement, essentially.
What the chances are?
No, because I'm talking about a little bit different model where stability it comes not only phase diagram, but because of extra pressure from other particles, such as axion. In this case, it is not absolutely stable when you don't have axion domain wall. If you don't have any pressure. Okay.
But would it hit Jupiter as a sun? Where,
yeah, Jupiter as a sun or Earth, they wouldn't catch it because essentially it goes through it. We do not have enough density in our Earth. You can calculate very easily. If you have 10 to minus 2 centimeter, you calculate the density and you know that in order to stop such kind of stuff, the density in this cylinder must be roughly speaking the same, not density, but the total mass, must be roughly speaking the same as the density inside, otherwise you cannot stop it. So Earth and Jupiter is not sufficiently large objects, not sufficiently dense. Sun is not sufficiently dense object, but as I said, neutron star it is.
Questions, so
just in time.